Hello and welcome to Banking Transform, the top podcast in retail banking. I'm your host, Jim Roos, owner and CEO of the Digital Banking Report and co-publisher of the Financial Brand. In today's episode, we're thrilled to have Dara Morrissey, the Director of AI at Microsoft Worldwide Financial Services, join us today to discuss the exciting world of generative AI and its potential applications in banking. We delve into various use cases and adoption patterns, including internal organizational applications, enhancing customer experiences, and the development of new product offerings made possible by this new technology. Dara provides a roadmap for banks looking to adopt generative AI, emphasizing the importance of defining a clear strategy, choosing the right co-pilot for specific use cases, and fostering a culture of continuous learning and reskilling. This episode is a must-listen to for anyone interested in understanding how generative AI is reshaping the banking industry and unlocking new opportunities for innovation and growth. Not a day goes by that the opportunities and challenges of generative AI aren't the focus of both internal and external conversations in the banking world. The good news is that generative AI case studies are emerging that can help pave the path for progress. How can generative AI assist in areas like contact centers, fraud detection, market research, and code modernization, as well as how can it enable more personalized and engaging customer interactions? So let's dig into what's happening. So welcome to the show, Dara. Before we start, can you share with our audience a little bit about your role at Microsoft, as well as a short background on how Microsoft is partnering with financial institutions on the deployment of new generative AI solutions?
Sure thing, Jim, and it's great to be here. So a bit about myself. So I'm from Ireland, as you might be able to tell from the accent. I work in the worldwide financial services team, and I'm really lucky in my job. I get to see all of the innovation taking place across all my customers across the world. I'm based out of Redmond, which is a suburb just outside Seattle, where Microsoft headquarters are. And I'm amazed by the wave of interest in this technology and what banks are doing with it. It's really incredible. And I think the use cases that you mentioned, all of the banks are starting with, you know, things like code modernization. We have one big Wall Street bank doing that for about the last 2 years now. And the reason why I like talking about it is that the benefits of it are very well understood now that it's been in market for 2 years. And it just started out, like a kind of autocomplete type capability. But now there's so much more you can do with it. You can do things like automate your testing. And what I find really exciting when I talk to banks about it is all the legacy code that banks have. You know, I studied COBOL in college. That's how old I am. And there's a lot of COBOL code there. And, you know, we can do things now where you can ask a question about how this code was written. What is it doing? You can even do things like document the code inline. And then you can even do things like convert it to a more modern language. And we're actually doing that in Microsoft, Windows. Windows is the product I'm using right now. A lot of that was written in C++, and we're converting it to a new language that's going to be a bit more secure and will reduce the number of patches that you get on Patch Tuesday.
Well, it's interesting because it's really a bridge from the old to the new, which is really exciting, and it provides a lot of opportunity because bankers who are legacy bankers, been around for a while, can actually envision how this can move the organization forward in a much simpler way than we've ever done before. So when you look at the use cases around contact centers, fraud detection, market research, what are the most exciting use cases that you've seen in the marketplace in financial services?
Yeah, I think the ones that really excite me, I love the contact center one, and within that use case, there's a couple of different stages you can take. You can do things like just summarize the conversation between you and the customer. And I have one Canadian bank that just wanted to do that and play it back to the customer because, you know, anytime I ring a contact center, I never remember what I said. I never remember what we agreed. And sometimes I don't remember what the follow-ups are. So it just shows that, you know, the CEO of that bank told me, I just want the customer to know that I'm listening to them, you know, and that's kind of a basic one. We have one insurance company where we did first notice a loss, where it started to pull out the key points in that conversation. You know, Jim, Jim drove into me in his Porsche and wrecked my Mini or something like that. It would actually pull those points out. And then you can actually, the advanced stage of this now is where you can do things like agent assist, where you're actually coaching the contact center agent in real time. And you can actually do it to do things like track compliance. So you only recommend a certain credit card at a certain time based on what they are earning and things like that. So it's very exciting. And what you can do with that use case too is, the other use case that's really popular is this knowledge concept of a knowledge base that's much more powerful than traditional search. So you can, a lot of banks have done this with their product documentation. And, you know, you can put a knowledge base around it where you can ask any kind of question. And what you can do is actually combine those two use cases. So you can actually learn from every conversation into the bank. You can push it into your knowledge base. And this way you get a continually learning bank, and it's learning from every conversation. And I think that's really exciting. And, you know, we had intelligent banking on marketing materials for years, but I actually believe this is really intelligent, a really intelligent bank, if you like.
Yeah, it's interesting because we interviewed a gentleman by the name of Brian Romley that mentioned this kind of this, I'll call it a digital twin, which is really not a good analogy for it, but where you can build this insight into the customer over time through the question and answers that are going on, as well as the product suites and everything else. But it's all captured. And so what your service recommendations would be different than mine, but on a one-to-one basis as opposed to a segment or something that's artificially developed or based on where I am in the life cycle or in my life finances. And you look at that and you start saying, you know, people are going to have to buy into it. But once they do, they're going to see the power of their information in a secure setting to be used to improve their financial wellness, which is really kind of exciting because it's a dialogue as opposed to AI by itself, the traditional AI that could build models. This is really capturing insight on a real-time basis. And as you said, even sharing it with the human aspect of a financial institution in a way that can coach them into how to have conversations, which integrates multiple customer service sectors, which is really exciting.
Yeah, and I think the other side benefit we're seeing in a lot of the projects is one of the challenges that banks have is contact center staff are churning out at an alarming rate. You know, sometimes it can be every 6 months, they lose about 30%. And it's because it's a tough job. You know, you're sort of seeing people at their worst. Sometimes they're hanging there for a while. They get through to somebody and then they can't find the answer. So that is a very tough job. And what we're seeing now is improved job satisfaction in contact center staff. You know, the agents can actually start to do what we'd love them to do, which was sort of start to cross-sell and upsell or, you know, become much more kind of higher value stuff. I'm not saying what they do currently is low value at all, but it's just, I think that is a tough and underappreciated job inside a bank.
You know, one thing that I really didn't understand as generative AI has evolved, but I'm starting to understand a little bit more now, is the whole concept of copilots and copilot stacks and how you can choose copilots for a specific use case. Can you explain a little bit about the whole concept of a copilot?
So again, if you think about, the concept of somebody helping you to do your job, or somebody helping you get started on a task, and you're sort of overseeing what they do, I think it's an ingenious concept that Microsoft invented, and it's because there's a number of really important reasons for it, especially in banking. You know, we know this technology doesn't get things right all the time, and a lot of the use cases that banks use, they're sort of they're with a tolerance of a margin of error, if you like. And what you need for generative AI, if it does something for you, you do need a human to oversee what it's doing, make sure it's getting it right. And the thing that I'm really excited about is this concept of a copilot that can actually do stuff as well. So when we brought it into Office and Word and PowerPoint, it will actually not just help you find an answer, it will actually go and do something, which is really, really exciting to me. You know, the fact that you can, you know, create a PowerPoint from a Word document and go back in the other direction is just mind blowing. I mean, I use it all the time to record my meetings with account teams, and I meet account teams every week to get prepped to meet their customers. And in the past, I would sort of try and write down this into OneNote, type it in myself. I don't have an admin, and it's just great. It's like having a small team around you. And where it's going is really interesting is that you can have co-pilots now that help you understand data, and you can have a conversation with data. You can model data in different ways. I think a lot of people haven't realized that power is just amazing if you start using it.
With this concept, with this capability, you can actually democratize data sets much easier than you have in the past, because you can help the people that get the information actually use the information as opposed to simply just another dump of data, correct?
Yeah, and even what we have is that we see generative AI being used with the outputs of predictive AI. So, a couple of the partners I work with, they have anti-money laundering solutions. And what they have is this concept of a co-pilot that is looking at all of the fraud incidents. And it's kind of helping you narrow those down to real ones faster by just talking to the data. And you can even then partially generate the next steps. You know, what documenting an incident looks like, it could actually sort of go and do that. So I think that's where it's really exciting. It's sort of it's kind of at the end of a value chain around some of these processes. You can actually sort of make the outputs even easier to digest and use.
So as banks are looking to infuse generative AI into products and customer experience solutions, what have you seen that financial institutions really have to keep in mind as they're developing these things to make it so that directionally they're doing the right thing?
Yeah, I think with the first wave of use cases we saw, they were all mostly internal inside the bank, focused on those productivity scenarios. The kind of next wave of it is going to be about how you take it into the conversation with the customer through a traditional bot type engagement. And what a lot of my customers, one of the things that banks are doing is sort of learning how to deploy this safely internally first before taking it to their customers. Now we have a couple of companies doing this already. It's happening very quickly in capital markets. So companies like Morningstar, they've put in kind of co-pilots in front of all of their data. And again, it just makes it easier to consume that market research, you know. So they're starting to monetize it that way. I think what we have seen with bots in the past is they've been pretty dumb. You know, they answer two or three questions, and then they will bounce you out to a contact center or a website. What I love about this tech is you can have a natural conversation. And one of the things that we're doing to make this safe for our customers is a whole set of guardrails that we have in our product, where we can control the conversation and scope it very carefully, so that you know your conversation with this bank can't go sideways. And we even did this with a car company recently, Mercedes. With Mercedes in the US, we put the power of ChatGPT into the cars, and this was all built on Azure OpenAI. And again, that you can ask it, you know, give me some tips for an Irish roast dinner, but you can't ask it. you can't ask it, you know, I want to rob a bank. Give me some tips. I'm a getaway driver. It will stop you with the guardrails, you know. So I think those things are, it took us a long time to build those. You know, we actually built them with OpenAI directly, and then we built them into our own services, these guardrails. And, you know, as a bank, you can just take advantage of them. We're improving them all the time as well.
So what's interesting, as you've referenced, is that the initial implementations of generative AI were really in the same places that AI was being implemented, which was reducing costs, making efficiencies better in the back office, risk and fraud, which is always going to be a focus because it has such a cost element to it if you get it wrong. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing now more organizations using it to personalize and engage customers and to build more engagement over the life of the experience. Mm-hmm. What are some things you've seen in the financial services area around the personalization? Have you seen any organizations really start to get it right in that? I know it's all beginning, because to personalize, you need to keep on collecting data. But what have you seen in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think I've seen some really interesting use cases around things like financial management. You know, in the past, people got a PFM or a pie chart, and then you went to Starbucks, and your bank app might slap you and say, that cost $6, that coffee, you know, and they're not particularly useful, and they're sort of historical looking, you know. So one really interesting AI use case with one of our partners, they have this thing called a self-driving financial management solution, and it's not fully self-driving. So you know the way in cars you have a dial that you can sort of put, you can actually sort of enable it in different ways. And what I love about it is it sort of will, if you have extra money left over, it will automatically save it for you. They've also flipped it as well. So if people are in financial difficulties, they actually used it in COVID, you know, to help small businesses. You know, they saw that, you know, people were experiencing shortages of money. And what I loved is they sort of reached back out to the customer and said, here's some things that we can do to help, or we can give you a holiday on this mortgage and things like that. I think they're really, I really like that because, you know, when people run into financial difficulties, they tend to not talk to the bank, or they sort of hope it goes away and it just makes it worse, you know? So I think that's really cool. There's some other interesting patterns too. We're seeing avatars as well now. We work with a company called Soul Machines. They have a great, they have this really human-like avatar. And again, there's some scenarios where people don't want to talk to a human. I run an insurance company in the UK that they were sort of looking at it for their agents who were selling to farmers, selling life insurance. And, you know, they didn't want to ask, you know, how much do you smoke or drink? No, they could actually talk to this avatar and answer the questions while they're not in the room, you know. So I think there's some really cool stuff emerging. I think where it's going is, I think you'll be able to have a conversation with the bank in a new way when this matures. I think being able to sort of just talk to your bank in a natural way is going to be game changing.
Well, it's interesting too. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I had an experience with Delta Airlines where I had a first world problem with my seat as I came back from Amsterdam to Detroit, and I wanted to kind of solve it while I was on the plane. It was just one of these missions I had. And I talked to the bot. I talked to the customer service agent without the agent being there. I talked to the website. I even went to social media and didn't get to the solution point I wanted, but I forgot about when I landed. And when I got back to my house about a week later, a human called me and said, by the way, I see that, you know, you've had some challenges and that you've used virtually every tool we have to get your problem solved, but it hasn't necessarily been solved because we haven't seen an endpoint to this. I'm calling now to let you know, number one, we apologize. We know that we're working very heavily on getting all of our channels to ask the right questions to get the right answer. She goes, but the challenge right now is we have a problem with the different channels talking to each other where they don't repeat some of the things that they should learn along the way. She goes, but we're using generative AI to build solutions that will actually be captured and then distributed to all channels immediately, so you won't go through this repetitive process. And I thought, that's a key element that AI by itself wasn't able to do, but generative AI, because of the dialogue aspect, from my perspective, perception is, you don't have to keep on the same dialogue, or you can advance the dialogue based on what the last conversation was. I also see it as generative AI being something that is a composable solution that you can make it as small or as big as you want based on what your needs are. But does it level the playing field between your small and your large financial institutions, or does it have the opportunity to? Because the technology is not overwhelmingly expensive. There are costs involved. But if you focus on a specific problem area, small financial institutions can develop tools that are as effective or more effective than large ones, correct?
Yeah, I think the thing, for me, the biggest thing about it when I talk to my customers is I wouldn't overthink this. I think you're going to have to do it, you know. I'll tell you a story. One of my kids, she got into trouble. I tried to manage her screen time on her phone and she hacked it, you know. And she could hack it.
I love that. Generated a monster.
So I bought this Nokia flip phone from Amazon for $30, and I made her go into school with it, and she was mortified, you know. But it was, the funniest thing was, it happened around this time last year, and I was sort of thinking to myself that day, is this thing real? Like, it seems to be huge, this thing. And we were sitting down with my wife, we were having a glass of wine, and she sent this apology to both of us. And the apology was about this long on the phone. It was like, and it was using all these words that I hadn't heard her say, you know. It was like, I undoubtedly have areas for personal growth and things like this. And my wife was like, oh, that's lovely. And I said, no, it's all I can see in this message are a ton of NVIDIA GPUs spinning around and generating this apology with AI, you know. So she, now, and then I realized actually, you know, so she is going to be going into the workforce in a couple of years, and she's using it now. She's using it now to as a tutor. She was using it to do homework. We thought we caught that. But so she's using it every day. So as a bank, you know, you're still going to have to hire people in 4 or 5 years, and you're going to be, she'll have a choice. Go to a bank that has AI and one that doesn't. It would be like, Jim, you starting in Microsoft next week and we wouldn't give you a PC. I think it's going to be like that. And I think, so I don't really think there's an option here. It's sort of already happened. And so I think, and in terms of leveling the playing field, I do think it does level the playing field and that everyone is learning together. The thing I do like about generative AI too is it's easier to build than traditional predictive AI, which is where the big banks had really good capability. You know, there's a lot though to building a traditional machine learning model. You have to get the data into shape, you have to label it, and then you have to build a model, and then you have to do A/B testing, and then you have to kind of bring more data to it over time. And with generative AI, we've even had some POCs that were built by our sales teams. I've never seen that before. So we didn't need to get data scientists in. We just sort of brought the data to the capability. So it's very accessible. And then, of course, we're going to be giving every bank sort of out-of-the-box AI with Office. So even in the tools that you use, there'll be copilots there. So I think it's going to... I think what could be differentiating, though, is banks that you know start earlier will build up the capability inside the organization to actually use it, you know. So like even at Microsoft, we're getting a lot of training now on copilots, how to prompt them to get the right stuff back out. I think that's gonna take a little bit of time. I think what we are seeing with banks is you don't need to do it all in one go. You can layer these out very slowly or phase them out slowly. So even at Microsoft, like we didn't get Word, Excel and PowerPoint all at once. You know, the first thing they gave us was Teams recording, and then it was a month later, I saw it show up in PowerPoint, and then, you know, so you can make it digestible from a user's point of view.
Well, it's interesting too, because from Microsoft's point of view, right now it's all open field. There's a whole lot of things going on, but very quickly, you're going to have use cases that you can deploy to financial institutions. Let's just take the financial institution set and say, you know, we may have a basis set, very much like we did with cloud, where initially everybody's just using it the way they're using it. But then we realized there were so many elements to the deployment of cloud technology that were replicable, that were exactly the same from institution to institution. So Microsoft can really play the role of a consultant saying, here's all the basic information you have to have, and we're going to get you there. And then where you want to fine tune it, where you want to make it specific to your organization, that's where you can take it on your own. But that's going to make that the learning curve is extraordinarily faster than it was with AI, which was still, we know how people have used it, but actually helping somebody get to the starting line or beyond the starting line is difficult. And when you work with financial institutions, what roles and skills do you see as essential for success, and how are organizations right now answering that need? Are they developing from within? Are they using partners like Microsoft to get them there, or are they all just fighting in the battlefield to get talent, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, there was, I think with predictive AI, there was a huge war for talent. You know, I did see one bank in China, I know, they went out and they hired 30 data scientists, but they didn't really know what to do. I actually don't think that's sustainable or a good thing for a bank to do. You know, what I think is more sustainable is people, giving people the opportunity to reskill and do these roles, you know, because if you think about it, you know, nobody knows the bank's products better than the people inside the bank and their customers, you know. And if you hire a load of data scientists, they don't know what you need to use it for. They just want to be told what to build. And it's a that was a big challenge. I met a data scientist a couple of years ago who had an NFL sports agent. He was getting paid that much. And this was at the really high end of AI. He was like sort of self-driving cars AI. So I don't think that's really achievable. Now what we've done in Microsoft is we have a whole set of tooling to help you build what I think is a data-driven bank. And the really what you need to do is sort of take the really amazing data scientists and split out what they do across different people. So the really amazing data scientists can take data, build a model, and tell the story about the data. And that doesn't need to be all one person. You know, we can get people that can work with data, build a generative AI application now, and you can also, you know, build a testing or test it yourself. And so it's just becoming easier. One of the things we did as well is create this concept of a citizen developer or citizen data scientist, where Jim, you could just take a set of data. We can actually prompt you to say, it looks like you need one of these models that could be sentiment analysis or something. And it will actually build the model with the data. So I think over time, it's going to become even more democratized. You know, I'd say Copilot and Excel, you'll be able to do incredible things with AI in a couple of years. So what I do see banks doing though, is they do want to become AI and data driven banks. And I have seen CEOs say this to their people, you know, I don't want this to be something in the corner done by an analytics team. I want everyone in the bank part of this value chain. And if you don't want to do this, maybe go somewhere else. You know, it was very blunt, actually, what they said. And some of the banks that are doing this are, I see amazing impact. You know, they actually make decisions based on their data. A lot of people don't trust their data as well, which is another thing. But that's, I think, where it's going.
I think it's interesting because it makes employees feel more valuable if they're involved in the deployment of solutions based on the data. And, you know, I've been banking my whole career, and so much of this time I look back and say, you had to knock on the door, you had to beg, you had to plead, you had to barter to get reports, which were simply reports. They weren't solutions. They simply told you where you were on a specific day. And, you know, organizations build entire banks around those data points, but it was never shared with anybody because there's a trust factor. There's a, you know, there, it's another thing to go from if it's a data sheet versus a solution sheet and going to the next steps. And it never went towards a uniform strategy or roadmap. And you did a presentation recently at Bank Director, and one of the things you really spend a lot of time on, it looked like, was talking about how do you start this process, the key steps in defining your AI strategy and the roadmap. Because again, just like any solution, if you don't have the roadmap and strategy set out for what you want to achieve, you'll never get there. It's just like a GPS system in a car. If you say, I want to go north. North is a whole lot of directions. There's very different variations of north, not due north, but, you know. And so you need to set that roadmap. How do organizations get started?
Yeah, I think the first use case I would start with actually is your developers. It's the most mature generative AI scenario. And if you... As you're going to build new applications for this, why not build them with generative AI itself? You know, so I think your developers as well. Banks struggle to attract developers, so it's really about getting more output from your existing developers. We sort of see 30-40% improvements in developer productivity, so that's a really quick win. And then I would think about, you know, the out of the box AI. Gen AI that you're going to get from us, you know, you're going to, if you start to introduce it to Teams and Office, you're going to hit a ton of use cases there that are sort of horizontal across the whole business. And then what you're left with then are a set of custom use cases. These could be things like, you could actually start with contact center, just enhancing what you currently have in your contact center. You don't have to rip out your contact center either. It's just about sort of adding the capabilities on top. I think building a knowledge base too is a great way of learning how to use this inside the organization. Your product documentation isn't super sensitive, so it's not the end of the world if something happens there. And it's a great. This is where a lot of banks have started. I think the other really interesting use case I didn't mention is how your relationship roles inside the organization can use this. So One really interesting use case around advisory is how you might use it to prep an advisor before the meeting. So typically advisors, you know, they log into lots of different screens. But if you could, you know, use generative AI to give them a pack just before, here's the client, here's Jim, here's his portfolio. Some of this might be generative and predictive AI, but it would kind of produce this for them, summarize what happened in the previous meeting. And then in the meeting itself, you could also even start to have a conversation with the data. You know, you could say, if I add 10% to my 401k contribution, what does that look like in 20 years? You can even start going there. And then post the meeting, you know, summarize what happened, send back the actions to the customer. I think I'm really excited by those, you know, and even when I meet a financial advisor and he writes down stuff on pencil on a notepad, and he's like me, my handwriting's really bad. I think, you know, I think those things, those productivity improvements are really cool.
Well, it's interesting is because it can be generated so quickly. I mean, that's you know, you can give it basic information. It can come up with really strong recommendations, solutions, insights that would take years to find because there's so much out there. You know, one thing we found is in recent podcasts, we've discussed how generative AI can assist in the learning and reskilling process, both formally and informally. How do you envision generative AI as a teaching tool as opposed to a learning tool? You know, how do you see it as being a teaching tool to move entire sets of employees forward in their careers, but also just in their personal lives as well?
Yeah, I think it is a great tool. I think one use case that McKinsey had recently was actually training wealth advisors, new wealth advisors, with simulated conversations. You can actually simulate the Gen AI can act like a customer, and then it actually can score, can kind of score the conversation or coach the advisor, you know, which I think is very cool. I think the other thing is it's like you're promoted as well. So I even pay for ChatGPT myself, and I just.
You work for Microsoft, so that's a reason for ChatGPT. I'm paying multiple subscriptions already on multiple platforms because each platform is somewhat different in the way they come up with answers, and some are better in certain categories, some are better than others. But I'm not second guessing my decision on those at all.
No. But again, I even use it sometimes if I'm meeting a certain. Let's say I'm meeting a certain persona in a bank. Now, I'm not super deep in capital markets, for example. So sometimes I will ask it, you know, tell me about this person's job or what are good questions to ask them. Now, I don't trust the outputs of it 100%, but it sort of gives me enough to get started. And I think it's actually, you know, we have kids using it. Kids in Africa are kind of using it as a tutoring tool as well. So I think it is an amazing tool. It's sort of, I think one other interesting thing was Jensen, the CEO of NVIDIA, he was on a panel recently and he said, you know, domain expertise is actually going to be more valuable. So say your knowledge about banking is not in any of these GPTs yet, you know, or it is there, but it's sort of, you know what's right and what's wrong, you know, so. I think he said domain expertise will become more valuable. He said like he wouldn't send his kid now to learn to be a coder. Now I don't believe coders are going to disappear overnight, but he said, I think, you know, what I would focus on is building your own domain expertise in the future.
You know, that's so interesting because as I got used to using it at the very beginning, I mean, I started November of 2021 or whatever it was, 2022. And I found very quickly that the output was as strong as the input and or as weak. And a lot of people said, you know, I don't believe in it. It's not working really well. It doesn't give me anything new. Mm-hmm. And I quickly come back and go, what do your questions look like? And you just discuss the fact that as we get better at working with this technology, the technology is going to get better at providing us capabilities we didn't have before. Yes, yeah. Some of the things I'm doing is simply a time-saving device. In other ways, it's a way to avoid writer's block. If I'm building content, I will ask the question of an AI, a generative AI tool, and it will help me get over the hump on things I wasn't aware I might have been missing. We also heard, and I've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast, we had a person that wrote a book that had multiple authors as part of the book, and he would take each chapter and go to the AI tool. If you were to give this a 1 out of 5 stars, what was wrong with what was written from your perspective? Mm-hmm. As opposed to asking us to take it to a higher level, he actually said, where's my blind spot here? Because you can get somewhat lazy at times and think that everything it's going to generate is right. Well, it isn't. And you need to know, okay, what could be wrong to know how to go forward. So just kind of exciting. And, you know, we look at these opportunities, these potentials, but there's also challenges. What challenges do you see on the horizon with regard to the development and the deployment of AI solutions, generative AI solutions in the financial services area?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is going to be, I think, getting to more precision on the answers out of it, I think is one. Now, we are closing that gap in a couple of ways at Microsoft. One of the things now we can do is get real-time data into a conversation. We have these things called plugins, so we can reach out and get, say, you know, what is the latest stock price of Microsoft? And you get back an answer, and you can see that you get traceability on the answer. You can see that it is actually what it is. That's great for like discrete answers, you know, that have a very defined kind of, they're either wrong or right. And then I think where we're going though is we're going to get better at, you know, helping you build your own models. It's going to become cheaper to do. At the moment, it's quite expensive to build your own foundational model, a large foundational model. Now, the price is coming down all the time. One challenge I do see though is banks love building stuff, you know, and stuff that they don't necessarily need to or will make any difference to their customer. So I had one bank that built a browser recently. Again, it was kind of, my thing was, why would you do that? You know, but if you build, a lot of banks are trying to build a foundational model and then add on a use case. And I don't think that's the right way. I would start with the use case, work back to what you need, and then pick a model, you know, start with the smallest one. And as you improve, as if you need more accuracy, go to a larger one. And that way you're sort of, it's how you build technology in the past. You know, you never picked your database and then built an application. It was always kind of working back from what you need to do. So I do see that as a challenge though. I think the other challenges are going to be around, you know, how we integrate it into more applications. I think we're doing a ton there in our platform to make that easier. But yeah, I think, and the other thing is analysis paralysis is another point pattern I'm seeing. I'm seeing some banks kind of getting to a list of 50 use cases, and then somebody comes in and tries to cost them out and assess them. And I just think it's sort of not a waste of time, but it's, business cases never deliver what they said they were going to deliver,
right,
either direction, you know? So I think it's a waste of time. I think you should really get started and learn. You know, you don't learn to drive by, you know, reading a book. You actually get into a car and you go out onto the road. You don't go onto the highway first. You start small. And I think that's what most banks are doing. But I do see some banks that haven't done anything yet, and they're kind of trying to come up with a perfect use case. And I just don't think that's a good use case.
Boy, that is so key, because I think that we see in the industry that it's going so fast. Mm-hmm. Catching up is going to be so hard. I use the analogy of Bank of America's Erica platform, the voice banking platform. And a lot of organizations said, yeah, we don't need that. I look back now and say, look how much information, how much dialogue they've captured that's going to give them a head start on generative AI deployment, because they've already used this interaction. They've already built tools that feed data into the model. And I think just as importantly, consumers bought into it. Consumers started testing it and they started feeling better about it. And I think that's one part we're missing is just because we can build it doesn't mean they'll come, which means that, you know, even if I create this great interactive tool from a customer insight perspective, our consumers can be afraid of what they're giving to their bank more than they do with Amazon, who's already built this trust. And I think you're right. Those organizations that hesitate and say, I want to wait for the perfect solution, the perfect use case, or I want to wait to see if this plays out financially. Mm-hmm. That catch up is very, very costly. And you know, just from the knowledge standpoint, being able to have all your employees feel comfortable with not only using these tools, but getting data and insights from these tools that they can deploy to their customers. So, you know, finally, you know, Dara, what's interesting is there's certainly a continuous flow of new iterations of ChatGPT and many of the competing platforms. Each of them are introducing amazing expansions of capabilities. There was one this week. There's one almost every week from one of the platforms saying, now we have this and it can go here. Where do you see this technology going in just the next 1 to 3 years?
Yeah, it's really tricky. I actually have a slide that I presented at Frank Director, and I had the three waves of deployment inside, bringing it outside. And then on the tour box, I kind of say, actually, I have no idea. And I'm saying that from a position of, it's happening so quick, and it's happened. Like, nobody saw this coming. So, you know, I personally think where it's going to go is as these models get more powerful, Sam Altman talks about this thing called artificial general intelligence. We're not there yet at all, but I think when we get there, there's going to be some really interesting use cases there, I think, where you might have AI sort of monitoring the bank. You might have an AI that would look at the core systems and do self-healing if something goes wrong, or it might be able to see coordinated fraud attempts on the bank in a different way that banks can't currently do. And again, this is just my humble opinion. I have no idea where this is going to go. Yeah. It could be brand new financial products that are built from the ground up on AI. You know, I think it's exciting to speculate. I think the other thing that's going to happen too is we have this other wave of tech coming, which is quantum. And, you know, that's going to break encryption. We're working on that with all our partners to get ready for that. But I think that is also going to be interesting. You know, what will quantum do when you're building these models? And then, you know, what will happen there? You know, and banks need to be in the cloud, I think, to be ready for these things. I'm not saying that as a Microsoft shareholder. I'm just saying you won't be able to do much of this on premise. So you need to be sort of well on your way in the cloud to be ready for these things, because they're going to happen faster than we think, I think.
Well, it's interesting too, because I can see a time when maybe the banks become the source of all this insight, but they give the consumer themselves the ability to use the tools for their own use. You know, especially when you're talking about financial wellness and predictive ability to run models and all that. This all generative AI makes this whole process easier overall. And I think if the bank becomes the custodian, but the consumer is giving flexibility on making it good for themselves, that's a product. I mean, it's a generative AI product. So, Dara, thank you so much for being on the show. It's amazing to see. We've had multiple conversations with people that work at Microsoft, because you're well ahead of the curve with regard to generative AI. But it's interesting because we've gone from tell us what it is to tell us how it can be used to now tell us how it is being used. And we're talking about a total of 17 months. This is happening very quickly. And I think, you know, the key element to know here is you need to get on board. And even if it's just on your personal base, we talked about before the podcast how we both use these tools on an ongoing basis to make us smarter, to make us more aware, to test our ability to use it. And I think it's exciting because it does open the door to all new opportunities, some challenges as well, but ones that we can manage. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. It was great to chat to you today. Loved it.
Thanks for listening to Banking Transformed, winner of 3 international awards for podcast excellence. If you enjoy what we're doing, please show some love in the form of a review. It helps us continue to get great guests like today. Finally, be sure to catch my recent articles on the financial brand and check out the research we're doing for the Digital Bank Report. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to our senior producer, Leah Hassage, and your audio engineer and video producer, Will Pritz. I'm your host, Jim Roos. Until next time, remember, new technologies are coming at us faster than ever before. The question becomes, will you and your organization be ready when they do?
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.